Greetings, this is your host, Reverend Juliet Nightingale, and welcome to this transmission of Toward the Light, Leading Back to the Source. This is a program centered on near-death, out-of-body, and similar spiritually transformative experiences, and related topics, including what people should know about the dying process, the many facets of after-death communications, living interdimensionally and being multi-sensory, intuition and telepathy, and more. We feature special guests who are both experiencers and researchers in the realm of NDEs, and you're welcome to call in to ask questions or make comments during the show. Telephone 877-876-5227 in the U.S. or 888-810-8322 in Canada, or you can ring direct at 530-876-3222. We offer special services through our organization, Toward the Light, including near-death studies and support, psychic, spiritual, grief, and motivational counseling, Reiki and remote healing, MDE books and videos, and other products and services for body, mind, and spirit. I'd also like to encourage you to help support this program and PBS Radio by making a donation or sponsoring a show. For more information, please visit our website, toardthelight.org. This week, I'm very pleased to have back a wonderful friend, PMH Atwater. Welcome to the show, PMH.
It's good to be here, Juliet.
It's wonderful to have you. And because I'm on location right now, I don't remember what you wanted to call our topic, but I should announce to our audience that we are going to have you in a two-segment program here. So we're going to do part one this week, and we will resume next week. So what is the title of your
My goodness, Juliet. It's called Times of Change, The Great Shifting. It's about what's going on right now in our world, in our lives, in our laps, and what might be coming. It's not necessarily predictive, but it's certainly a way for us to look at the trends and the energy patterns and to gain some type of perspective about what's going on with the upheavals in our world. And this particular topic I give in workshop form. And it's a two-parter. Part one, where we're dealing with the ages, or what's going on in our environment, what's going on in our world, the larger picture. And part two is what's going on in the human family. Now, we're not going to do the human family in February. We're doing part one, which is the great shifting of the ages. And because it is a fairly long program, you and I decided that it might be fun to try something new on your program we've never tried before, or you've never tried before, and that is to take this one topic and sort of divide it up and do it in two segments. So we'll do segment one this Sunday and segment one next Sunday.
Or segment two next Sunday.
Or excuse me, segment two next Sunday. Yeah, sorry.
You know what? I'm already feeling Mercury retrograde, which happens in a couple of days, correct?
Well, it happens Tuesday night, but you always start to feel it 10 days before.
So yeah. Things a little twisted at the moment.
So I'll forgive you for getting. That's fine. But I'd like to just dive right into the subject if I could, because it's an exciting subject, and it's certainly one that affects everybody.
Yes, absolutely. So go ahead,
do share with our audience. Well, you know, climb in whenever you can, but I'm sort of like the Energizer Bunny. You know, you sort of wind me up and I'm gone. You know, I just keep going and going and going. And it's kind of hard for me to stop. So if you feel you need to step in, please feel free. What I want to do right now, first of all, is to give some groundwork here to sort of paint word pictures. And in the case of radio, we might say paint sound pictures so that the people at home can begin in their own minds to image and to connect the dots with what's happening in the world today with some of the things I'm talking about. So I want to talk in terms of cycles, and I want to talk about the great sweep of history. And the reason I want to do that to begin with is that's where we're going to get some perspective. Now, we know scientifically that about every 11,000 years, the Earth plane experiences what is called a wipeout. And a wipeout is where large amounts of life are killed or die off because of great volcanic eruptions or great sinking, earthquakes, wars, fires, land changes, so forth and so on. So we know that that's a particular cycle, and we're due now, thinking in terms of 11,000 years, we're due now for another wipeout. And that's what some people say, oh dear, the end of the world. Well, it's not really that kind of thing. What I want to do here, though, is enlarge that a little bit and invite your audience to imagine the turning of a great cosmic wheel. It's called the cosmic year. And that's what's really happening now, is a change of a much, much, much bigger cycle. And that change, that cycle, is every 25,920 years. So that is a big, 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 big cycle. And
isn't that what you talk about in your book, Beyond the Indigo Children?
Beyond the Indigo Children, I talk a lot about this to really give people groundwork to understanding that this kind of cycle, this really, really big one, and even some of the smaller cycles that aren't quite as big, were planned and understood and talked about and predicted by almost all the indigenous people throughout the world, not just the Mayan calendar and the Mayans. It's everywhere. The Algonquins, the Chinese. I mean, it doesn't seem to matter what culture you turn to, even Aboriginal. We have this sense of suns or worlds. They would use different words to describe these huge cycles, but I'll just call them worlds. And most of them recognize five major worlds. There's only one, the yugas, the Vedic yugas, that only recognize four. But most of them recognize five worlds. And most of them pinpoint the time we're in now as the coming of the fifth world. So I just want everyone to get that sense that what is happening, excuse me, sorry about that. What is happening now is not just global warming, although that's certainly part of it. You know, the sun is heating up. We're in a cycle for these massive upheavals. And then we human beings in our modern, consumption of oil and gas and so forth and so on are polluting the sky and fouling our earth and sort of accelerating what is occurring naturally. So I just want everybody in the listening audience to have that good sense that these are huge cycles that are culminating now. Now, they're not culminating this year. It'll take decades to culminate, but we're in the middle of that. And so energy is accelerating because the Earth and the Earth changes are accelerating. But it's not just the Earth, the universe as well. And I talk about a lot of this in the book, Beyond the Indigo Children, the changes that are happening with the other planets and the universe as well. You know, we know that we live in a bubble universe where 95%, this just gets me, 95% of what exists in our universe is dark matter. It can't be seen. So we only see 5% of what's there. We only know really about 5% of what's there. We also know scientifically that the galaxies are speeding up. So if you got that sense that the energy is accelerating in the air and in your life and in the traffic and everywhere else, please know you're absolutely right. It is speeding up. But the whole galaxy is speeding up. And I was talking to an astronomer, and he says, you know, he says, we can track it. We can see them. The galaxies are streaking across the universe, and they look just like frisbees. They're going so fast, and they're all going toward a central something, and they don't know what that is. They call it the Great Attractor. You know, isn't that a neat name? All of the galaxies are speeding toward this Great Attractor. And this attractor is influencing the galaxies as they speed along to form patterns as they speed along. And I've been able to see some of these in our observatories. And I would encourage anybody who has an opportunity to do that or to see some of these pictures, thanks to Hubble. It's just, you know, it just blows your mind what's happening with our universe. But back down here on planet Earth, which is where we are now, and it's what I want to talk about now, is that we're very aware that there's a lot of specific things happening. And I'd like to just sort of briefly share with you some predictions that were made by Edgar Cayce, the sleeping prophet, very famous Edgar Cayce. And he made these predictions in 1940. So bear that in mind as I read them to you. There's 10 of them. And he made them in 1940. So that's a long time ago. And this is what he said. And it's for now, this particular time frame. But he predicted this in 1940. He said, a new form of medicine will emerge, a kind of transformational healing rooted in holism and dealing with the body as an energy system. And isn't that exactly what's happening? I mean, I look at that and I think, you know, he was just right on. Number two, the continuity of life will be fully accepted as an indisputable fact. Isn't that incredible? That life continues. We don't lose anything. It just keeps going and going. Number three.
Experiences we have been able to speak it back to the well, because we've been there and we've come back.
And the deathbed visions and all this kind of thing.
Absolutely.
Number three, science and spirituality will cease to be antagonists. And that's starting to happen now.
Oh, thank
God. You know, there's starting to be more and more of a merging of science and spirituality. Number four, a kind of social leveling will come to pass on a worldwide scale. And isn't this exactly what outsourcing is doing in business and in finance?
Yes. Good point there.
Number five, dramatic geographical changes will take place, including very significant changes in weather patterns. And we're certainly seeing that. We've been seeing that the last couple of years, and we're and you know, it's increasing. It began in 2004. It began right around Thanksgiving in November of 2004. That's when the pattern for the Great Earth Changes began. So we're in it, and it's picking up. And so we're, you know, I would not right now want to live in Paris, New York. You know, the drifts of snow up there, 20 feet, 20 feet, you know. Well, anyway, moving right along. Number six, leadership on the international scene will move to the Orient, even to central China. And that is what's happening. We may not be comfortable with that, but it's happening. Even our finance. You know, if you look at if you study finances, which I do, and you study some of these patternings, we're seeing now that the financial strength of the world is moving to Asia. And when I say Asia and the Orient, I'm speaking specifically, of course, of the Oriental countries, China, but also, interestingly enough, Australia. So, you know, our big financial centers are moving there. Archaeological discoveries about ancient civilizations will radically alter our sense of human history. And that's exactly what's happening. Even if you look at the DNA samplings that's occurring, the blood types, you know, the haplotypes and the genome and all this kind of thing, they're finding out things about history that's just toppling everything upside down. For instance, 62% of the Mayans are Chinese. Most of the Scottish people are Egyptian. You know, you get in and you get into the haplotypes and you look at the DNA and you find out, wow, you know, the old lineages and the immigrations and the histories are not like we were taught they were in school. They're not like they are with the indigenous people and their predictions and their prophecies and their traditions. Isn't that incredible?
Well, David Icke even pointed that out in his books about, you know, how the migrations, came from Egypt.
They weren't like we thought they were.
No, not at all.
And there's a lot of evidence now to establish that China discovered America in 1421, long before Columbus or Amerigo Vespucius. It was China. And there's so much of their DNA that is here. In fact, Chinese DNA is all over South America and Central America. They left their tracks behind. You know, and it's just indisputable. We can argue all we want, but there it is, the haplotypes, the DNA, it's all there. Number 8, intuition and psychic abilities will become the norm.
Thank you.
Thank you, God.
Thank you.
Individuals will have a personal and direct connection with the spiritual world in ways that allow that connection to be applied practically in daily life.
Living interdimensionally and being multi-sensory.
Well, that's our new kids.
Yep.
You know, the new kids, multi-channel.
Yep.
They live in a multiverse.
Yes.
You know, it's not a universe, it's a multiverse.
Multiverse.
Ah, we could go on and on about the new kids, but that's not the subject here. Number 9, the principle of oneness will become paramount in human affairs. The oneness of God will guide all religious traditions. The oneness of energy will guide science. And the oneness of all humanity will direct politics. Well, you know, we're not there yet, but that's a goal. That's where we want to go. And number 10, Christ will reappear directly and physically in earthly life. He really predicted and was behind the reemergence, the coming of the Christ. And you know, there's an Islamic Muslim prediction very similar to that when they talk about the 12th Imam, which is Mahdi, and they're expecting the return of Mahdi. And it's a very similar kind of thing to our predictions in Christianity of the reappearance of the Christ. So those are the kinds of predictions that Edgar Casey made in 1940. But sort of to bring us down to earth here, I want to talk about Stephen Hawking and a statement he made just last year when he was in Hong Kong. And he said, and I quote, "The survival of the human race depends on its ability to find new homes elsewhere in the universe because there's an increasing risk that a disaster will destroy the Earth." Isn't that something?
Wow.
So here we have, you know, kind of coming back to a different opinion, different idea, coming from a different place, that we have fouled up our Earth to the point that we can't make it better. Now, I do not agree with him.
I want to kind of make a comment there, too, because there's been a lot of debate about this planet being destroyed or this planet just being radically altered but never really destroyed, just going through a rebirth.
Mm-hmm. I really think that's more of what we're going toward and are involved in. That's why I call it the great shifting.
Yes.
Because even with the people who set up the Mayan calendar, what the daykeepers tell us, the daykeepers of the Mayan calendar, what they tell us is there was never any thought or understanding that the end of the Mayan calendar was the end of the world. Rather, it was an end of a certain cycle.
Yes.
but it was not the end of the world. So, you know, if you look at it that way, then you realize it's the ending of the world as we know it.
Exactly, and that's what I've been sharing with people, too. It's just the end of this cycle, this age, things as we've known it, and it's time to roll over into a new shift, a new
right.
Future,
and
paradigm.
And before we get into the patterns of the various years that I would like to share with people, I want to broach a few more observations just to give us even more groundwork before we start marching into the various years. And that is right now, up and down the East Coast, and a lot of people aren't aware of this, but right now, up and down the East Coast, and the last few months even, there's been a lot of methane venting. You know, the Earth is responding. The Earth is responding to these cycles, and the Earth is very much involved in this great shifting. And there's a lot of methane venting, there is a lot of skin infections, and there is a lot of allergies all of a sudden with people up and down the East Coast. So if you've got an allergy for no reason, you've never had it before, all of a sudden you do now, or if you're dealing with a lot of fungal infections or a lot of different kinds of skin irritations, please know that's part of this methane venting. And it's part of the shifting that's going on. So I just want to share that. As far as the United States is concerned, I also want to share something else that I'll talk about more. But I want to broach it now I'm going to be moving more and more into here and now kinds of things and in your pocket kinds of things and in your life kinds of things. And specifically also the United States of America. I'm also an astrologer. And I want to note here that in the chart of the United States, we are moving into a retrograde Mars cycle in the progressed U.S. chart. Now, that's not going to mean anything to anybody except if you're an astrologer. But what it means, what it shows, is that we're entering into a period where our ability to judge world affairs is being clipped. We're not as acutely clear or focused or even able to respond in a very clear and focused way to world affairs. And it's very difficult for us right now to have a balanced view. So we're not as assertive and powerful as we used to be. And that cycle's already begun, and it won't end for 70 years.
Wow.
So for the next 70 years, 7-0, the next 70 years, we're being challenged in a very major way. It doesn't matter who's president. It doesn't matter what political party. We're being challenged in a very major way to really judge world affairs and our place in world affairs and to be as powerful as we used to be or as assertive as we used to be. And it's not just because of Bush and the Iraqi war and mistakes and all this other kind of thing. I want people to realize that this is a cycle and we're moving into that.
Do you see anything with the UK, for example, or Europe?
I'm focusing at this particular time mostly with the United States. I didn't get that much into the world affairs in this particular workshop that I've been offering, although I do talk about it somewhat, especially financially and environmentally. But, you know, if we're going to talk about Britain, if we're going to talk about Europe, they're very much affected, and Canada, and the United States too, are very much affected by what's happening in the Atlantic Ocean with that great, huge river that's down in the ocean. You know, the largest, hugest river on planet Earth is not above ground. It's below the water. And it's in the Atlantic Ocean, this massive belt. It flows in a figure eight, this huge river. And it flows from the warmer climes up to about, New Zealand. No, not New Zealand. That's the warmer climes. But it flows up to Greenland. I think off the coast of northern Greenland is a great large whirlpool, and that's the top of this huge river. And it flows in a figure eight, and what keeps it flowing, what keeps that warm air coming up and the moisture coming up so that we can raise our crops and have food in the northern climes is all predicated on salty water. Specifically salt. If you've got enough salt in the water, then that huge, massive river is able to keep rolling and moving and sweeping right along. You know, it works a lot, of course, with the rotation of the earth, but what keeps it moving is salt. Well, with all of this glacier melt and all the melting of the ice and snow, we've got a lot of fresh water now coming into the Atlantic, and that's washing away the salt. Now, this has happened before in history. Again, this is cyclic. You know, these large snow melts are cyclic, but it's happening a lot, and that great huge river has slowed down now. I don't know if it's 50%, but maybe 40. I mean, it is slowing. And as it slows, then we have more irregular weather patterns. We have more extreme weather patterns, and especially the way we can farm and raise food alters and changes as well. Now, if it goes down completely, if it slows down to the point that it stops, and by the way, it's done that before, should it stop, that's when we get our ice ages.
Wow.
So if you're looking at what could happen, and certainly what's possible to happen, because it's already now started, you're looking at this huge river. I forget what the name of that river is, but I talk about it a lot in Beyond the Indigo Children. So if you want facts and figures and references, all of that is in the book. It's certainly, I can't do something like that in a radio show. So, you know, go to your nearest store and get Beyond the Indigo Children. So if you want a better sense of that, then do indeed get the book. But I want to sort of truck right along here because I'd like to get in as much material as I can, but not so much that I'm just sort of shoving it down everybody's throat. You know, I'm one of these, I just love to share information like this because I really think it helps. I think it helps us to get better prepared. I think it helps us in our mind to have a better sense of what's going on so we don't feel like victims. And it gives us alternatives. You know, it really motivates us to do a different kind of thinking. When we take a look at these energy factors and how they're moving, then that helps us to plan our lives. It helps us with our jobs. It helps us with buying and selling homes. It helps us in very specific ways. But it helps us really to have a better sense of ourself, of our relationships, and of God. To realize that we're all working together here. This is team. This is a teamwork. And we're all working together. So when I start talking about the years, and I'm going to start talking about that now, I'm going to begin with 1982. And the reason I'm beginning with 1982 specifically is that's when the big floodgates of the new children came in. They've been coming in for a century or more. But the big floodgates opened up in 1982. But 1982 is also the year when we had massive changes in science and in technology. Some of those changes were the fifth, don't you love the fives, The fives are just, the repeating fives, I mean, no one can tell me we're not in the fifth world and going deeper into the fifth world because of all the fives. The fifth huge upheaval in communication in the human family occurred specifically in the year 1982, and it was the release and the availability of the personal computer. You know, that happened in 1982. Also in 1982 was the release of the science that was done on the heart. We now know that the heart is our fifth brain. About 62% of all the cells in the heart are neural cells, identical to what's in the brain. Our heart can think. Our heart is now considered to be the fifth brain structure. So we have five brains. Or five structures within our brain, and one of them is the heart. And I can go on and on and on about the upheavals, the incredibly wonderful things that happened in 1982. But also happening then was a lot of sweeping discoveries that redefine life as we know it. And, you know, we're all now so tied with iPods and computers and all this kind of stuff. And to realize that that just came on the scene for individuals in 1982. You know, that wasn't that long ago. And then 1987, the harmonic convergence, the fall of the Berlin Wall. Look at the difference that made in our politics. The beginnings of what is called, with our spiritual and psychic friends, the 11-11 energy, which is supposed to be that time of spiritual awakening. And in 1987 is the magnetic shifting of the planet that was noticed more than before. It's picking up. The biological shifting of DNA across the world, that is shifting and picking up. Of course, the information frenzy because of the computers. We often tend to feel as if we're all having a nervous breakdown or the world is having a nervous breakdown because of the overstimulation of the endocrine system, you know, and all this information frenzy. It's like, help, help, you know, I've had enough. But then in 1990, between 1990 and 1991, an incredible thing happened. And very few people paid any attention to this, but I did. Because I know what it means. And I don't know that I can get around to talking about it today. And if I don't, we can consider it to be a cliffhanger. But in 1991, there was an explosion. That's a good word. There was an explosion of ADHD in the population of the United States. I think, you know, worldwide probably, but the stats I can give you are on the United States, 600% jump in ADHD, and it started in 1990, 1991. It was not before then.
Goodness.
It was not before then. So if we're going to blame mercury preservatives in serums that we're pumping into kids, it wasn't like that before then. So it's like, wait a minute, folks, something else is going on here, and I'll be very happy to talk about that something else a little bit later, because it's really exciting. And, you know, when we're talking about September 11, 2001, and I think that's the next big energy factor, your daughter and I were able to, you know, really get deep on September 11, 2001. So for those people who maybe didn't hear that, I want to do just a really quick little review. That terrorist act rent suppressed karma in mass mind. So think in terms of anything that's been suppressed or repressed in the human family for the last 2,000 years or more. We're all rent or released. The wound was cut by that terrorist act. And we're now seeing that the sons of Abraham are still fighting each other. And all of this stuff behind the terrorist movements, if you want to trace it, it goes back over 2,000 years ago. So we're just talking old stuff that's now being released in the modern age. All this pain and anger and misgivings for the last 2,000 years have now broken through with a force the world can no longer ignore. But you know what we're not looking at with what happened with the Twin Towers? And I think we need to. Each of the planes, the four planes that went down, each and every one of them could have held 266 people. Yet, 266 people went down as a total in those planes. Isn't that interesting? Each plane could have held 266, but yet the total amount that went down in the planes, four planes, was 266. We're not looking at the people that escaped the towers, that were in the towers. They're estimating 24,000 people that were in the towers got out. There was about 54% to 58% that were at work. All the rest were ill that morning, or missed their bus, or missed their connections that morning, and never got there. We're not looking at that part of the equation, and I think that's very, very important. I think another thing that's important about this event, this is the first real evidence that there's a global mind, that there's a global consciousness. You know, Dean Radin and the Global Consciousness Project, where he's got random generators across the world, they all skewed in one direction that day and continued for an unprecedented number of hours. And they began shifting all in one direction 3 days before the event. And the biggest spike was 3 hours before the event. It's as if most of the people in the world knew something like this was going to happen before it happened, and they all reacted. And they started reacting 3 days before it happened, and they just about went cuckoo nuts about 3 hours before it happened. We became one mind 3 hours before the terrorist attack.
And that's a very important point too, PMH, because, you know, during that day, as was already mentioned when my daughter hosted the show, it was on 11 September of this last year that you and she talked.
Yes.
It was just the telepathy. Again, there's that union of the mind that enabled me to not completely go hysterical as a mother wondering if her daughter was still alive. Because I could hear her telepathically. I could actually hear her voice telling me, I'm okay. And if it weren't for that, and I talk about this all the time, I keep telling people, you've got to listen to your intuition. You've got to trust
right.
your telepathic.
What a difference that makes. What a difference that makes. I won't go into all the repeating 9s and 11s that occurred that day. But I will say one other thing. That if you do the astrology of that attack, our nation's chart connected with a black hole. And I think that's extremely important because black holes, symbolically at least, open up portals to another dimension. And what it shows, if you study that portal and what it shows, this is what it shows. That the battleground of terrorism, the battleground is consciousness, the enemy is ignorance, and the weapons are ideologies.
Very good.
Isn't that incredible? That's what it shows.
Wow.
The battleground is consciousness, the enemy is ignorance, and the weapons are ideologies.
I couldn't agree more. That is really significant.
We had another big change in energy patterning in 2003. That's when Uranus, the big flashlight in the sky, at least that's the way we astrologers look at it, Uranus is the changing of social cycles in the human family. It entered the sign of Pisces. Uranus is the great awakener. Pisces is the great ocean of emotion. So we've got this thunderbolt, or I should say this lightning bolt of illumination, the great awakener that splashes down into weepy, watery Pisces. And when you look at what's happened since then, and these cycles are always 8 years long, so when you look at it started in 2003, so just add 8 to 2003, and you've got, what is it, 2011? So that's when we go into our next cycle, next social cycle. But we're still there, Uranus and Pisces. It's the age of meaning-making. It's where we have, just hold on to this. We now have, and it's official, the science of consciousness, the science of synchronicity. You know, all of these consciousness cycles and or studies and scientific studies are being birthed under Uranus and Pisces. We've got the rebirth of the sacred, where we move from left brain thinking to right brain, from thinking to feeling, mind to emotion. We have the integration of science and spirituality. My dear, in my doctor's office is a prayer room. There's a prayer room in my doctor's office. So that if you want to be in prayer, regardless of what kind of prayer you use, there is room in my doctor's office for that. There are prayer chapels now in hospitals. You know, and doctors now are even praying during surgery, where we get more and more of, you know, the power of prayer, and we have more science behind that now. So we're getting the integration of science and spirituality, technology and imagination. And coming from technology and imagination, this new cycle is giving us full bore on synthetic worlds.
Well, something I want to add to that, too, is the fact that 2002-2003, that's when a lot more material started coming out about near-death experiences,
mm-hmm.
about out-of-body experiences. That's when I remember just coming out of the closet and saying, okay, come what may, I am going to proclaim to the world, I've had near-death experiences. Consciousness, you know, is multidimensional, and that we do exist on other dimensions, not just the physical one. There's just been this whole opening up and people coming out from all over the place, validating the life continuum, that consciousness survives death.
And we're now finally starting to get science behind it.
Yes.
And
yes.
That's what's making it even more exciting, because we can quote journals now. We can quote papers published in peer-reviewed journals that are saying very similar things to what we've been saying. And that, to me, is absolutely thrilling. But, you know, with all of this that is happening, also as part of this social cycle is the raise or the rise of an absolute hunger for emotional connection. Because, remember, Pisces is an emotional sign. People want intimacy. They want emotion. They want that connection. So they're turning more and more to arts and creativity and theater. But you're seeing it a lot in our relationships with each other. We want more intimacy. We want more. We have a hunger to touch each other and for emotions. 2003 also is the harmonic concordance. So that's even more of the awakening of consciousness. But you know, in 2004, specifically June 8th, And you saw this in the papers. We had the Venus eclipse of the Sun. Now, this doesn't happen that often, the Venus eclipses of the Sun. There's always a twin. There's always two of them, and they always happen 8 years apart. And whenever there's a Venus eclipse of the Sun, so we had our first one in 2004, 8 years later, 2012, we'll have our second one. During that interim time between the eclipses, And you can go back in history and check. You can check me out on this. And you will find that always during this time, this 8 years between the eclipses, Venus eclipse of the sun, there is a rise of the feminine. Powerful women emerge in powerful ways between eclipses. So what's happened since 2004 here in our modern times right now? Well, we've got the Da Vinci Code. We've got all this stuff about the Gospel of Mary Magdalene, the rise of Kuan Yin and compassion. We've got Hillary Clinton running for the president, Condoleezza Rice. We've got the head of Germany, we've got Nancy Pelosi, and all of a sudden, we're getting strong women coming forward in very strong ways. So I don't think I would call it the birth of the feminine, but I think I would call it the acceleration and the recognition of powerful women's energies. And I want to really honor what is happening with our Muslim sisters that are coming forward in Iraq and Iran, and they are coming forward and starting schools, and they're educating girls, and we're starting in some parts of the world to recognize that women are powerful, women are smart if you educate them, they're as smart as anybody else, and that they can do incredible, wonderful, and powerful things. And we're really starting to focus on that and recognize it. And, of course, I've already mentioned that in mid-November 2004 was the beginning of the Great Earth Changes cycle. And, of course, the very following month was the big tsunami in the Indian Ocean. So, you know, just from then, one after another, you know, we've had these huge changes. We've had Katrina. We've had just one big, huge one after another. Let me say, you ain't seen nothing yet.
Indeed.
This is just the beginning. This is just the beginning of the kinds of changes and shifting that we're going to see in the earth plane. In some places, it's going to be extremely good. In other places, it's going to be very, very challenging. But everyone's going to see it to one extent or another. And in 2005, a lot of psychics have said that Ascension Day was March 5, 2005, when the Masters return, transmitting directly into the Earth plane, so affecting our DNA. So I like to give, you know, well-rounded views here of what psychics are saying, mystics are saying, science is saying. I think we need that. We need to look at things as honestly and as openly as we possibly can. I'm going to end on 2007, but I don't know that I can make it that far with the time we have, but I'm going to scurry right along and talk about 2006, because 2006 was a big, big year. And we've just passed that year, so a lot of us know that already. We had Moon standstill in 2006. Again, this is a regular cycle, happens about every 18 and a half years. But what happens whenever we get Moon standstill, and that's kind of a technical term, we feel a lot of heavy pressure in our lives. Energy is released, great amounts of energy is released. It drives the tide in more accelerated and powerful ways. Weather patterns break up during moon standstill. It really is a time of acceleration of energy, as if we needed anything more. You know, it's like we've already got a lot of acceleration of energy. Well, we got a lot more throughout 2006. And one of the months that there was a heavy peaking was July. And I don't know if you noticed a difference in your life in the month of July, but I certainly did in mine. I almost died. I had a really big challenge traveling, trying to travel to Canada and come back. And the things that happened to me were just unbelievable. And I wrote about it. What did I call it? When polarities change. So if you want to get on my website, which is just myname.com, pmhatwater.com, get in the article When Polarities Change, or When Polarities Merge, I think is the name of it. And that's what I went through in July. But you know, July was when, for the first time, the big oil bursts in Asia started trading oil in euros and yen, not just dollars. And if you don't think that's not big, think again.
Exactly.
That could eventually cause the collapse of the American dollar. Now, I haven't heard a lot more about that bourse, so apparently there's been some wheeling and dealing, and it's not doing as much business. But if it continues, and if it catches on, and if it's more powerful, it could cause, you know, just a lot of big stuff. We've just to give you an idea of how important the value of a country's basic currency is. In England, you know, you're from England.
Yes.
To protect the pound, because the pound was going down in value, pressure was put on the United States, and that's what caused the Great Depression. There's a book on it now called Roosevelt, The Great Depression and the Economics of Recovery, that goes into how important a country's currency is. And if you devalue that currency, that could have a serious political and governmental repercussions. And that's what happened in England. And because of what happened to the pound in England, that is exactly what caused the Great Depression in the United States. So study that. It's just very, very sobering. And of course, that in July of 2006, that's when it was announced, and that's when it was known, discussed, written about, that within the next 15 years, so add 15 to 6, it is predicted that 50% of the world's wealth, all the world's wealth, not just American, all the world's wealth will move from U.S. and Europe to Australia, Asia.
That's what I've been feeling for quite a long time myself, and it's really something to think about. One thing I want to
Yeah, and then when you look at the fact that we've now dropped in our cycles in our country to a cycle that we won't be as assertive worldwide as we used to be, it just really becomes rather sobering. But when I look at Australia, you know, as a near-death researcher, we've downscaled a lot of what we're talking about as percentages in the population. You know, we used to say that that it was like, you know, maybe 7-8%, maybe 9% of the people in any given population would have a near-death experience. Well, we now know better. That's not true. We've had some really good clinical studies, so it's now, you know, we can now say with more confidence that it's between 4-5% in every country but Australia. And Australia is the only country that we have really good figures for that says 8%. So it's
wow.
Double. It's double of the population in Australia will probably have a near-death experience than anywhere else that we know of in the world that we have good figures for yet. So the fact that so much of the world's wealth is moving that direction, you know, Australia is a very unique place. It's a source of ancient wisdom. you know, the oldest indigenous culture on earth is the Aboriginals, you know, and they're still there, and they're still, you know, functioning. So, well, I think we got a little beep. I don't know how much time we've got left.
We've got a few seconds there, and I do
just a few seconds. Well, let me just quickly say 2007 is a year of sudden extremes, so hold on to your hat. Consider this a cliffhanger. We'll talk about it more next week, Sunday. Be here.
Okay. And thank you for joining us, CMH. And I want to remind everyone that it is only with the heart that one sees rightly. What is essential is invisible to the eye, and only love prevails. Please visit my website, towardsdelight.org. We will speak to you next week. Blessings and light to everyone. This is Toward the Light, leading back to the source. Signing off until next Sunday. Blessings.